Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, welcome to Beer Assassins Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal. It's Tuesday, September 13th, 2016, and we've got some special guests in town. It's kind of a cool week. We're kind of going to be talking more about cider tonight than beer. Yesterday was the Cider Week New York City press preview, and so we have some guys that are coming in the show, John Reynolds from Black Duck and Finger Lakes, and Ryan Burke from Angry Orchard. But the show came together because Tom Oliver, months ago, emailed me and said, hey, man, we're going to be at Wassail, that great cider bar in the Lower East Side, on September 13th for dinner. I'll be there with Ryan Burke from Angry Orchard. So that's kind of the show. We're joined by B.R. Roya, who's Shelton Brothers, the importer of Oliver's. And again, John Reynolds from Black Duck will be joining us. But, you know, B.R., it's always great having you on the show.
Thanks, Jimmy.
I haven't seen you in a while.
It's been a little while.
But, you know, to me, you know, when we first started doing cider shows years ago, Tom Oliver was one of our first guests. And what does he mean to you guys? Because at Shelton Brothers, you know, you were all beer. And then one day, you discovered Tom Oliver.
Exactly. And we were happy to have done so. We focus on great beers that we find, but we're not just limited to beers. When we started initially with British ciders, and we've since moved on. We've got American ciders, we've got New Zealand ciders, French ciders, Spanish ciders, you know, in all different styles, and these are all very representative of where they come from. And Tom is just making some fantastic traditional ciders over in England, and they just, you know, they very really complement all other portfolio and the beers that we do. So it's really nice to have some ciders there.
Let's make a cheers to Tom. It's Tom Oliver's Doings. That's the name of the show tonight. And we're going to have some fun talking about it. So, Tom, you know, thanks for reaching out, man.
Jimmy, it's always great to come and see you. And it's always great to have a chance to enjoy a cider with you. Because I know you're a big cider fan. And you just like a good chance to get your hands on some new ciders and some that you probably won't have tasted before.
That's what I'm looking forward to doing tonight, yeah. So you and Ryan go way back. So Ryan Burke, you know, tell us how you guys met. I know you guys worked on some projects before.
Yeah, well, we've developed a collaborative cider called Gold Rush over the years, and that has a basic style to it, but it's developed and moved over time. Today's a great opportunity for us to talk about what the next Gold Rush will be like, whether it will be called Gold Rush or Doings or whatever we're going to come up with. We're thinking hard about it. But I had the pleasure of meeting up with Ryan when he was working with Greg Hall at Virtue Cider, and we hit it off. It's one of those things. It just happens. We hit it off, and we enjoyed talking about cider. We enjoyed making cider. And we enjoy everything that goes along with it, because there's a great social side to cider. I don't think there's many cider makers I've met who I don't really feel that I'm very happy to spend some time with. But Ryan, it just went further. And, he's a owner of a dog, too, a very fine dog. And that endeared me to him as well. So all good. We're really enjoying making cider together, I have to say.
Well, that's good. So, Ryan, what did it mean to you? I mean, you know, a little of your background. You're from New York State.
Sure. Yeah. I think for me, Tom's just been a sort of beacon of what's possible. I'd certainly had cider before and made cider before meeting Tom, but well before meeting him, and thanks to Shelton Brothers, I got to try cider, and I just had never had anything like that before. And I was at the time was really interested in lambic, sour beer, Cantillon, and all the usual suspects in that group, kind of tuned into what, you know, Sean is doing up at Hill Farmstead, that whole set of brewers. And I got to try, some of Tom's cider in Chicago at Westlake View Liquors. What's up, Christina? one of the best bottle shops in the country, if not the world. And I had it there, and it changed my life. That sipping that cider, I was like, I can't believe this is cider. And as time progressed and I got into the industry, then, you know, I had the opportunity to meet Tom, and he's really helped kind of form my view in cider and what's possible, and to always remember to focus on the past while looking at the future. And I think that's really important for cider making.
Cheers, man. Thanks
Cheers
for coming on.
Yeah.
So a few years ago, when you worked for Virtue, you went over to England. Mm-hmm. And tell us about, got to meet Tom, and you made some cider with him.
We went over to see the Royal Bath and West, which, you know, is sort of most like in sort of American country fair, but it's a little more intense than that. If you're us, and I mean us, everyone in this room, and probably most of the people listening, because you can taste about 100 odd ciders, and then also taste cheese from all around Europe in one place. So you go over to the cider booth, and you get your cider for like 10 cents or 50 cents or whatever it is. It's cheap. And then you go over to the cheese tent, and you can eat the best West Country cheese. So go over, eat some cheese, drink some cider. So we went over for that event and spent time with Tom in Ledbury. How's that pronunciation?
Yeah, Ledbury was Ledbury, very good pronunciation.
Ledbury.
Yeah, Ledbury.
These guys, they're working on their...
not too heavy on the lead.
Okay.
Yeah. Working on their Abbott and Costello routine.
But. Yeah. So, yeah, I went over that. That's where I got to meet Tom in person. We'd communicated a bunch before, and then that spun into collaborating on a cider called Ledbury, which we did at Virtue, and also Gold Rush, which we did there. And then I've moved on, we've continued to collaborate on that cider, which is, I think, you know, sort of indicative of not only our friendship, but our view on what's possible, and thinking about where this collaboration came from and what we can do with it next. And that's the fun part for us.
Yeah. So Tom, for our listeners who haven't heard you on, you've been on several shows over the years. I know your backstory. What is your philosophy of making cider? And there's a lot of history behind, you know, your orchard.
Yeah. Well, Herefordshire, where I come from, is the epicenter of bittersweet cider apple growing. And it also is the place where there's probably the most peri pears left now. There are some new plantings coming. So the whole area is steeped in the growing of the raw material for cider of peri. And it has a long history, a lot of colourful characters. And the whole thrust for me is we've got to make great cider. And I think sometimes over history, I know commercial realities are very important and all that, but the real thrust for me always is you've got to make great cider. And you've got to work out for you what is great cider. And great cider may be...
I was going to say that. What is great cider?
Yeah. There's, you know, it must look right, smell right, and taste right. And whatever that right is, because you mustn't be too prescriptive about it, but it must be really good on all fronts. And sometimes I think we forget about that, but you know, you mustn't. You must make sure everything you make and everything you send out of your cidery is top notch. And I think that's crucial. And then I think you must use your imagination, because you've got all this history and all this tradition. You've got this knowledge about apples and the varieties and what they can bring to a cider. But what's important is when you put it all together, are you giving the drinker something that's going to give you a really positive experience? So it needs to be really enjoyable. It needs to be a bit of a journey, and it needs to make sense. It needs to be an intelligent drink. I get frustrated when you taste something and you think, oh, you know, there's something really good in there, but I'm not getting it. It's not working for me. So really important, just good, drinkable, intelligent cider.
You know, Ryan, if you were going to meet Tom for the first time and you knew about his ciders, what's a question that you would ask him? And John Reynolds just came in from Black Duck Cidery. I'm going to ask him to ask you a question, too. This is a good time to pick Tom's brain.
Jeez.
Tom Oliver's doing.
Yeah, I guess it's hard for me to ask a question of Tom that I haven't already asked him, because I honestly lean on him so much as a mentor on on so many things in cider making, but nothing else.
I think maybe I should say now that the reason I have lost my hair is not because Ryan's asked me too many questions or lent on me. All right, I was losing my hair anyway.
I think one of the things I like continue to battle in my cider making is blending, and blending. You know, is the fun part, and it also is the most challenging part. And how do I make something that is, and touching on what you just said, how do I make something that is intelligent, is enjoyable, and is something more than just what I want? And so it's always sort of a, you know, I tend to drink a drier cider. I enjoy a drier cider, but you know, we're in the minority, right? Generally, it's a sweeter cider. That's what most people enjoy. So, you know, how do you then make something that you feel great about and also that a drinker is going to enjoy? And can you put it on draft? And will it work in a bar? And will it sell on the shelf? And you've got to think about all those things. So I guess my question to you is, where do you draw the line? Where do you draw the line as to your personal, how do you feel that when a bottle goes out that it has your integrity when you put your stamp on
that's
it?
You've got that thing. If it's a cider with integrity and that you believe in, then how much commercial reality has it got? And that's always quite a tough one, because there are some ciders I make that are not going to be obviously commercial. In fact, they're far from it, probably. But I still think their cider is worth making because they have something to say, and they do open up the possibility of what cider can be. And I think that's important to do that. But certainly the ciders that you have to make in order to be commercially a reality are quite often not the ciders you drink yourself. But that's all about the skill of making cider and blending. The great thing for me is to make a cider that is not one that you might drink on a regular basis, but other people really enjoy. I think that's tremendous.
And John Reynolds just walked in. John's Black Duck Cidery up in Finger Lakes. John, you know, is it the first time you met Tom?
It is the first time I met Tom. And it's kind of great to be next to, in my mind, a living legend. Especially when it comes to Perry, because we've planted quite a large pear orchard of true Perry pears at our farm. We make a lot of Perry, and I've always loved Tom Oliver's Perry. So I think my question would basically be, just tell me everything about Perry that you've done. Because, I mean, we've done three vintages, and I mean, I'm happy and I like them, but no, I think that the Tom Oliver's Perry's are, even for me, more so than the ciders. Perry's always fascinate me more. You know, it's a more complex beverage. It tends to be more aromatics. And really, there is some level of stupidity or craziness in those of us that decide to plant that, because it's not the short-term sort of thing like cider apples. I mean, which has a shorter turnaround when you plant the orchards. I mean, And you know, here in the Northeast, we fight fire blight and biennialness and all this stuff. So,
it certainly is a testing exercise making Perry. Making good Perry is a really demanding thing. I think it's patience. I was talking to John earlier about this. The one thing that you develop and learn, I think, you know, whether you make cider or Perry, but especially Perry, is patience. You really do need to let the fruit express itself, and it frequently isn't its first expression that it is its best. It may not be its second, but somewhere along the line you will capture it at its peak, and if you fail to do that, then you must let that peak come back around again, because it surely will. So it's patience and just using your palate. And Ryan was, you know, just talking about this. The palate that you have is the, for me, the single greatest tool in terms of making cider that you have. It's very useful to be physically fit and to be able to pick fruit and shift weights around and do this and do that. But ultimately, the thing that will differentiate all our ciders from each other is going to be our palates. Because even if you have the finest laboratory in the world and you have the finest technicians and scientists, they can work things up so far. But the ultimate test always is the palate. And, you know, touch wood. I seem to have a palate. Thank you. Come in.
Wood table.
Seems to be.
Tom Knox.
Seems to you know, work well with cider and perry. But I have to say, my palate when it comes to things like beer and wine is just not developed and sadly lacking. But it's hopefully it's half decent.
That's why I gave you the Hill Farmstead Edward IPA and you liked it.
Loved it.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're off to a great start here. We've got some great cider makers and we're talking more about cider and beer on Beer Assassins Radio. I would walk 500 miles an hour.
I would walk 500 more.
Music for this commercial break is brought to you by TaxDoc, and this one's called Vicodin Dreams.
In 1996, L. Knife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County, Brooklyn, through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education on all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 14 counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Assassins Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, before we close out with a Proclaimers song, Tom Oliver's secret day job is he manages rock and roll bands and something, so we always sing the Proclaimers song.
I thought it was a great attempt, too, Jimmy there, and Ryan coming in on the second harmony was very good. Mm-hmm.
We were onto something.
Are we auditioning? Yeah. I don't know. But Tom, you know, we were talking about, you know, a little background on all you guys and John from Black Ducks in the House, B.R. Royo from Shelton Brothers, and Ryan Burke. But Ryan, we know we didn't get to talk about your first cider. So this is something different. You guys, Angry Orchard, mm-hmm. You know, you were a brand, and now you actually have what, orchards and a cidery in New York State.
Yeah. About 2 years ago now, we purchased a property up in a little town called Walden, so right off the Hudson, a couple miles. And it's our center for innovation. We're doing all our new product development out of there. So it's an opportunity to move cider forward and from a liquid standpoint and also
So tell us what this cider is in our glass.
Yeah. So this is First Flora. This is a pretty special cider for us. It's the first fermentation that we did in Walden at the cider house. So in the first 3 months of production, we didn't pitch any yeast in the property. We did everything natural. We didn't want to have any inclusion of, you know, of controlled Saccharomyces yeast strains. So we did everything totally natural. There's a series of ciders that we're calling the Valley Floor, and this is one of them. So this particular cider is a blend of bittersweet, bitter sharp, and sharp apples, all from New York and the Northeast. Total wild fermentation, fermented very cold, about 45 degrees at peak. So it took about 4 months to get it to dryness. And then it spent about 5 months in used Calvados barrels. And then blended to bottle, totally unfiltered, still very low sulfur. We really wanted to present this in its natural form. It's really, I mean, it's sort of a once once in a cider house opportunity for us, right? We can never really make this one like
and
this
how about,
again.
How about Tom and then John? Just tell me what you think about Ryan's first cider.
Very nice cider. The great thing about a cider being wild yeast fermented, it can still be very clean and straight. And this tastes to me like a really clean fermentation. And there's some lovely sweetness being pulled out of the Calvados barrels. And so you get a lovely, both a warmth but a roundness to this cider. But there's enough sharpness and everything. No, it's a good cider, and very pleased to drink it.
Yeah, and we were at the New York Cider Association cider tasting yesterday, and it was 30-some cideries tasting sort of as a preview before Cider Week. And I will say, out of all the ciders and Perry's that I tasted there, that was my favorite.
Thanks, man.
It wasn't even close to me.
Say that again, man.
It was
official. John
Reynolds.
It was
my favorite.
Thanks,
yeah, without a doubt, it wasn't even close. So.
Yeah, man. And there's words like innovation. You know, what does that mean for you guys? Thanks. He's getting a $20 tip from Tom Oliver's paying people off in the studio.
I just want to say I usually get 50.
John Reynolds' endorsement.
Yeah, New York's always far too pricey for me.
Yeah. Well, I got to get sense of it. BR Roy, who's always the voice of reason. BR, you know, let's sum this up. You brought these gentlemen here. Tom Oliver, Ryan Burke, they're doing a dinner tonight at
Wassail.
So tell us what's going on at the dinner.
There will be, actually, I don't know what the final list has been decided on. It was initially going to be three ciders from each of them, and I think they've expanded it. And then paired with food. I mean, cider is just a wonderful beverage to pair with food. I mean, you know, beer is as well, but cider, there's just such a range of flavors. It's, you know, I liken it to something like, say, a Saison or Bière de Garde that has just so many different types of complexities to it that match with many different flavors. And it's just it's a wonderful beverage to eat or to have when you're eating. But I must say, for the Angry Orchard cider that we tried, as Tom said, it's extremely clean. I didn't realize it was all 100% natural fermentation.
Yeah, actually, everything I brought that we'll taste is total natural fermentation, which is really exciting for us. Is that, you know, we're doing this in this sort of pure natural state, and we're getting these really nice, clean ciders that are finishing out, and they're accentuating the fruit, which for us is the most important. We really like to pull, especially out of the bittersweet ciders that we do, we like to pull some of those sort of rustic phenolics that I would say are much like the ciders from Hereford and Somerset. And I really look for that in a cider, and so we're happy that in this 2015 season, we were able to pull a lot of those phenolics using natural fermentations.
And let's do this. Let's taste faster and talk more about it. So we just tried your great one, the Valley Floor. And now we got Tom. But this is your Herefordshire.
Okay.
Herefordshire.
Yeah. So what we've got here is Posh Scrumpy Dry. And Posh Scrumpy is my play on words. Scrumpy, a drink that's for everyone. And cloudy, made with apples 100%. So how can something that's scrumpy be posh? Well, that's what I'm advocating anyway. This is a massively big bittersweet cider. Some residual sweetness, so this has been keeved. So the sweetness is from unfermented
Tom
apple sugars.
Tom keeps bringing up pop culture. Posh. Spice.
Right. And there's a lot of spice in this too. It's a pretty demanding drink for those who have never tasted a full bittersweet ciders before.
I mean, what is it? It's like it's very ripe, almost overripe fruit, John?
Well, it's definitely that, but I mean, to me, this is like a true West Country cider. Me being a Sidra guy, I mean, a Spanish cider guy, but, you know, West Country to me is second, and I definitely love, like, heavy tannic ciders like that.
I mean, sorry to jump in, but this profile that I think we can hit lots of the similar points that are achievable in the West Country, especially on the East Coast, and especially in New York State. But one of the things we can't hit is this harsh tannin. We just don't have this here. This is one of the things that makes it very special to, I think, us as cider makers in the States, is
We just can't get this kind of tannin over here.
I will say 20 years our orchard is, and we have bittersweet, bitter sharps, both French and English varieties. And I can agree. We've never ever achieved something like
that. Yeah, and I think it really speaks to the I try not to say terroir too much, but it does speak to the importance of place in cider making, and it really does then, I think, elevate cider to the wine level, the taste of place.
Let me have more of that posh grumpy,
Tom. This shows to me, and I think it would show to anybody with an educated palate, that, geez, there's only one place that you can drink cider like this, and it's in Hereford, and that's it.
You know
it.
What it is? Sometimes you taste something, and it changes your palate expectations. I call it a palate reset. You're drinking sour ciders, you're used to that. Just now, my first taste of the posh grumpy was, overripe. But now it's like it's got more flavor. You're right, it's tannics. And now I don't want to go back.
Yeah.
And it begs for that cheese.
This is my palate reset, man, right?
It is a tough one, too. When you drink these ciders, the fullness of it and the length that you get from the tannins, it's a huge aftertaste, too. And you do need to follow it with something that's a little bit different. Don't try and repeat the same experience because it's not so easy.
But do you have a list of the foods for the dinner tonight?
You've got it, Jimmy. Yeah, I was going to read this out. The first thing I would like to say is it's a tremendous honor to get asked, obviously, here to speak with Jimmy on Beer Sessions, but it's also really great to get an opportunity to go to Wassail and do this dinner. And the fantastic news is that it's sold out.
Yeah.
So we think that's 50 people or come in.
And should we say, I was over in England with you in May, and we were having a drink, and Tom told me he was coming to the States, and I said, we should do a dinner together. And so I texted Dan Pucci while we were sitting there, Dan Pucci over at Wassail, and said, hey, man, Tom's going to be in town. Can we do a dinner? Absolutely, within 5 minutes, and then boom, we're doing it. So that's been super cool. Wassail is that whole team, that whole crew has been really supportive. It's been fun to work with them on this.
They've come up with some great dinners here. So here we go. Chilled smoked duck, plums, brioche, chiso. It shows my lack of knowledge there. Caramelized carrots, corn, pomegranate, molasses, and basil.
Basil, what's that?
Okay, yeah, I think that's basil over here. roasted poke loin. I think roasted pork loins, pork everywhere, isn't it? Mustard cream sauce, baby fennel, tempura kale, and then panna cotta, peach compote, streusel. So
sounds better when he reads it in English.
Right?
Accent.
Yeah. Does anyone need any translating there?
Does anyone know what a rocket is? Okay. In the vegetable garden,
it's arugula.
Thank you, yeah. Br. That's always in the old English cookbooks. Rocket.
Yeah.
That's a good one, man. I want to give a shout out to about Wassail. I know when they opened, they were a vegetarian restaurant, and I know that they've added meat. And I say, raise our glasses to Wassail for having meat, because
my glass is staying on the table.
Sorry, Don. But this is really historic to have you guys all here together. And in the time that we've had Cider Week, it started in 2011, and the different shows we've done. Just having Ryan here, I mean, what did it take for Angry Orchard, which again to me was a brand, to go into New York State and set up this cider facility, doing innovation, bringing in someone like you. And also, you sound like you are so involved in pushing the future of New York State cider.
Well, I think we're all involved in that. I'm happy and honored to be a part of it. We have a super strong collection of cider makers. I of course have a certain amount of passion for my home state, and so I'm really excited to see where we can all take it. So maybe I'm a little preferential to my home state, but I mean, I just think we just have this amazing group of people doing so many different things, and the possibilities are sort of endless, but everybody is focusing in on what grows well, focusing in on varieties, and you don't necessarily see that in the rest of the country, and I'm really proud of that. And I think you'd probably agree with me that New York is really unique that way. We've got the history and heritage. The Northeast really has a history and heritage of not only, you know, great apple varieties, great climate for growing those apple varieties, and also history and tradition around cider making. So, I mean, it's not hard for Angry Orchard to say, well, where's the place to be? It's New York. You know, it's the Hudson Valley. It's the Finger Lakes. It's Western New York. I mean, there's such a rich history of apple growing and cider making.
Tom has to give you a $20 tip for that quote.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, it wasn't a hard choice. You know, we looked around a lot, and we looked at a lot of orchards, and we settled on the one that we're at, and that's based on, you know, the climate. It's based on soil, and it's also based on history and tradition. So it's really, for me, it's a beautiful place to be, because those are the things I care about the most. And so it's really nice to be up there and looking at that.
And I'll second it. I mean, I think obviously New York is got the best soil, the best climate for cider. But I will say I'm actually really excited that Angry Orchard bought the property there in the Hudson and are doing what they're doing, because as Ryan may tell you or know, Angry Orchard can be very polarizing in the cider community to certain people. And to me, I mean, that's sort of the beauty and why it's not a black and white world. The best cider I tasted yesterday came from Angry Orchard. Out of 30 cideries I tasted through, it's not a black and white world. I mean, there's shades of gray. Yeah. And it's nonsense for us to, you know, we're in our infancy, the cider revival in the U.S., and for us to already start to pick sides and fight battles over ridiculous things, I think, is not going to help any of us. And clearly Angry Orchard is going to help New York cider when they're making delicious stuff like the Flora series.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that. I think it speaks to something, and I'll quote Tom Oliver as I sit next to him. What really matters is apples and blending. That's what matters. And so, like, I appreciate those comments, because that's all that really matters to me. Yeah. I want to grow great fruit, and I want to make great cider.
Yeah, I think that's a great point made by John and Ryan. There is no point in trying to disseminate and go after different cider makers, and for one reason or another, we're all making cider. We're all trying to sell cider, and you know, we need to let people make up their mind about the cider. If you want to shout about cider, you shout about your own, and you tell everyone what it is that you do, why you do it, and why it's so good. And that's the main thing. There is a tendency to bicker on occasion, and it's not productive. So, let's keep going.
Awesome. We're off to a great start again. And we'll be back in a few minutes to talk more about traditions of cider making on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Music for this break is brought to you by TaxStar, and this one's called Pianissimo Short.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, check us out, heritageradionetwork.org. You can become a member. You can become a supporter. Just go to the site, heritageradionetwork.org. We have more listeners than ever. We just found out that Beer Sessions Radio has people listening all over the world. And we're proud to have people from Sweden, England. I think that's how we know Tom Oliver. He sits at home and listens to our show.
And it puts me to sleep for all the best reasons, Jimmy.
And then you say, man, I'm going to call this one Posh Scrumpy and bring it to Jimmy.
Posh Scrumpy.
It's Posh Scrumpy. So, BR, you know, I want to talk to each one of these guys. Each one's from a different region. You know, now Ryan's place is in Walden, Hudson Valley. You know, Tom, of course, Herefordshire in England. And John is in the Finger Lakes. Both great apple growing regions. You know, what do you think, or do you have a question about, you know, tradition in cider making and maybe the role that it's playing in each one of these guys' ciders?
Well, I mean, I think that's what's so interesting is that there are different traditions in all these different regions. You know, when you look at the Basque cider, for example, compared to a New York cider, completely different. And even some of the producers who are using, you know, the similar type of apple varieties coming out with much different flavors, either based on their yeasts or their blending techniques or the barrels that they've aged in. You know, as I was saying, we have, you know, ciders from around the world that represent that sense of terroir, as it were. I mean, as Ryan said, mentioned, I don't like to overuse that word, but it really does apply to the ciders that we get out of these different regions. And we've been very lucky for here in New York that there is a very open mind towards ciders, and that has a lot to do with the traditions of the Hudson Valley. People much more receptive to ciders, I think, earlier in this market than in some other places. And for some people, for coming from beer into cider, it's a very easy transition if they are into the bigger, bolder flavors of the lambics, the goose, wild fermented ales, because there are some similarities where it's not, you know, just the sweet carbonated apple juice that many people think of. So we find it's a lot of beer drinkers have a very easy time transitioning over to the ciders. But one question I wanted to ask, we have one cider producer from Quebec in Canada, and was very surprised the last time I was up there doing the cider route that every single cider producer uses 100% eating apples. And yet some of them are coming out with some very interesting and complex flavors. Would you consider using 100% eating apples to make a cider, or is that just a heresy?
I don't think it's a heresy at all. I think it's a real challenge because a lot of what I look for in a cider comes from the tannins, which means it's going to be a bittersweet or a bitter sharp cider. But I think great cider can be made with any apple, but you just have to understand what that apple is going to give you how you best present it. So the opportunity I think that would exist is if you can somehow keep some of that natural sweetness from non-cider varieties and match it against the acidity and then build up some depth of flavor around that axis, those two axes, that would be a good thing. Unfortunately, Kievan sharp sweet ciders is harder than Kievan bittersweet apples. So it's a challenge, but it's one definitely worth looking at.
I would jump in on the Quebec thing because you know, predominantly those are Macs and Cortlands and to a limited extent Spartans, and it's just night and day the apples in Quebec versus say that same variety in the Finger Lakes or the Lower Hudson or even Lake Ontario. And having worked for Cornell and I used to do fruit research and even like a place like Lake Champlain, which is a very small New York apple growing region, the Macs are and Cortlands are far superior there. Like quality, even just for eating, it's almost too warm. I think for some of those varieties, when you start talking Lower Hudson and Finger Lakes, so I think that, you know, climate, especially there in Quebec, makes a huge difference, even though they're using some of those dessert varieties.
Let's jump. So Ryan, you guys bought a facility or made a facility in Hudson Valley.
We built one, yeah.
Tell us the background of that, the origins, were there existing trees?
Yeah, the orchard was existing. It's a 60-acre piece of property. It's been farmed by the Christ family of Walden for the last 100-odd years. Jeff, who we bought the property from, it was his first orchard to take on from his family. So when he was in his late 20s, he took that orchard over and farmed it and continues to farm it to this day. So we bought the orchard from him. It's 60 acre. The land is 60 acres. The planted acres are about 50. That's all Macintosh, some of the earlier Macs, Pioneer Macs, there's some Spartan, there's some Rome, John and Mac. It's all culinary fruit, or was all culinary fruit until spring, where we started replacing some of the trees. So we replaced 3 acres of culinary fruit with traditional bittersweet cider fruit, and a few American heirlooms like Golden Russet, Northern Spy. And this spring we'll do another, actually we'll do 4 acres this spring. And over time, you know, we're planning to transition that whole planted 50 acres from, you know, culinary fruit to bittersweet fruit, bitter sharp fruit. Yeah, so we're right in the middle of that.
So that's kind of the Hudson Valley tradition.
Yeah, I mean, there's a tradition of cider making there, for sure, that you can trace back. In fact, when we bought the property, there was an old barn on site that we had to take down. It was kind of beyond repair. And within that was an old cider press, you know, cider or apple sorting material and stuff. And if you come to take a visit, sort of half the cider house is production. The other half is for people to come and experience not just Angry Orchard as a brand, but cider as a category. So we put a lot of time and effort into the history of cider making globally, all the way down to as local as where you're standing. So a lot of it is about the history and heritage of especially of New York State apples. I guess, you know, we feel as Angry Orchard, you know, we've got the loudest mic. And for us, it's an honor to be able to talk into it. But it's also, you know, a privilege to maintain. And it's on us to have a tap room where 1,000 people come in on a Sunday and make sure that when they walk out of there, they know what cider is, because often they're walking in and they think it's cider beer. But when they leave our tap room, they've seen that cider has a history, cider has a present, and cider has a future. And a lot of that's based in New York State where they're standing. And a lot of it comes from Tom and not just Tom
so
specifically, but
Tom,
England.
If you say like your tradition, if you say cider to Americans, what do you think they're expecting when you say that?
Yeah, it's still the vast majority of people still think that cider is a non-fermented apple juice. I'm sure of that, but there are a growing number of people for whom cider is obviously an alcoholic drink made from apples, and the apples are usually potentially specific for cider. Now, I know that's coming from a small base, but it has grown immeasurably. Since I was last here, the change in cider in America has been phenomenal. The number of new cider producers that have come on stream is fantastic. And a lot of these cider producers are looking at the apples that they use and making the most they can to express what the apple's given them, which I think is a tremendous thing. So, you know, it's moving on. It's moving on at pace. But as Ryan and John both say, you know, you need to focus in on the apples, really, because that's key to it.
And Tom, I always think about, you know, food and beer pairing. So for fruit and cider, earlier Ryan was talking about that place in England where you could go to one side and get the cider, yeah, the other the cheese. Tell us about a couple of your ciders and some English cheeses that you like to eat with them.
Okay, so when it comes to Perry and off-dry Perry, I love a single Gloucester cheese. Because single Gloucester is a really delicate, simple taste in cheese, but when you pair it with Perry, the floralness of the Perry goes so beautifully with the milk in the cheese, and the milk comes from Gloucester cattle, and it really is a truly wonderful combination. So that's almost my top cheese Perry combination. With cider, this posh scrumpy is
posh
tremendous.
Scrumpy.
Posh scrumpy is great with strong cheddar. So Keen's cheddar,
posh
Montgomery cheddar.
Scrumpy.
Posh scrumpy. And Keen's cheddar, Montgomery cheddar, which I know I'm sure you can get at Murray's, is a tremendous combination.
Cheese and cider in particular. I don't know. Is there a better pairing?
Just maybe pork.
Yeah, right.
But cheese, pork, and cider.
But you, when you go to the vineyard, and of course, unfortunately, in the States, this isn't true. But when you speak of Hereford and Somerset, you know, if you were to go to a vineyard in the States, there's no pigs running around. There are no sheep. If you go to a brewery, there are no pigs. There are no sheep. If you go to the orchard, unfortunately, in the States, there are no pigs or no sheep. But if you go to an orchard in Hereford or Somerset, there are pigs and there are sheep and they're running underneath the trees and their milk or their meat is going to food and the apples on the trees above them are going to cider. And I'm sorry, but there is nothing better that you could pair with the meat and that cheese than with the cider Tom's that's grown on the trees. Oh, more, here's $100.
More money.
Yeah, but I mean, there is nothing better. That's it. Yeah. I'm sorry to my wine and beer friends, but there is nothing better.
I will say you can come to one cider in the U.S. and actually see pigs. Come to Black Duck. You can pet the pigs. And then you can eat the pig at some point when we butcher those pigs after we fatten them up on the pumice. And we do guinea hogs, so we do lard breed pigs because I like really fatty pork with my cider. So
yeah, and that
and now we're getting ready for a dinner at Wassail.
Yeah.
Music to my ears. Yeah,
but I say that's such a unique experience, and I guess from a cider drinker and fan of your cider and fan of cider in general and fan of food and drinking cider in general. That we appreciate you do that. I wish that was more prevalent because once you put cider in front of somebody with food, the right cider and the right food.
So they're saying that's really the next step is putting food and cider together.
Yeah, this needs to be at the table. This is at the table. This is about sharing. This is about coming together and tasting cider alongside of food, and that's why tonight is super special for us because we're going to get to challenge people's perceptions about what cider can be, and that's where we're at as an industry right now. Is most people don't know what we just talked about, right? They don't know how great cider and food can be, and it's on us as the people pushing that to let them know.
It's without doubt the great boys have stolen a march on cider. They have got the idea for the general public that wine and food are just made to go with each other. Well, of course, we have news for the wine producing world. That's just not the case. You cannot have it all to yourself. We can actually put in front of you dishes and ciders that go so well together. And I think it's up to us to get that message across to everyone and to give them the opportunity to try it. So this is why, of course, Wassail tonight is a fantastic opportunity to do just that. I would like to just say that the cider I've just had from Ryan is, I think, a fantastic cider. It is both chewy for me, but it's complex. So there's bitterness, there's sourness, there's fruit, there's a journey as you drink it. And I love it. I don't know what it's called, though. So
it's called Edu. It is named after Eduardo from Asturias, who's been a great influence and friend to me over time, and introduced me to so much Spanish cider, in particular when going over there to visit. Took many weeks to take me around and introduce me to Spanish cider makers, and so I hesitate to call it Spanish style cider. It definitely has influences of Asturias in it, and that's from wild fermentation as well as from a malolactic fermentation and extended aging in oak.
I raise my glass to you.
Cheers.
In Germany or Spain or wherever you are, it's a great cider, and I think you've tasted it anyway. But it's lovely.
Brilliant. Yeah. And one last project that we're going to pour as we close off. You were a part of a collaboration with Garrett Oliver, Brooklyn Brewery. Mm. Thornbridge Brewery are good buddies in England, and some of your cider lees from Oliver's.
The Serpent was a revelation to me. Garrett Oliver is a revelation to me. He is a stupendous person. A phenomenal palate, an understanding of alcoholic beverages like I've never met. Tremendous. So what he thought when he came to our cider house many years ago, I have no idea. But what he did do was he was able to taste our ciders for the first time and understand what we were trying to do. And he saw some potential. And so when the Serpent was developed, he developed the idea of taking what is essentially his local one and getting it brewed by Thornbridge, putting it in bourbon barrels and aging it alongside cider lees that I was pulling out of all our barrels from the year of 2013, leaving it in these barrels for a year or more and then blending it up. And the resulting drink is stupendous. It's a 9.5% massive drink, but it's a beer, but it smells like a cider, but it tastes like a It's tremendous. And what I love about this, and what I love about what I'm doing in the UK with a lot of beer people now, is blurring of the boundaries. Is it beer? Is it cider? Where do the boundaries meet? Are they do they exist anymore? Well, they don't. So at the moment, there's a lovely lambic beer coming out that's two-thirds cider, a third lambic wort. That was a collaboration with Johnny Mills at Bristol Beer Factory. And it's just fantastic because it is messing with people's preconceptions. It's messing with people's minds. But more than that, it's just giving you great, great drinks. And this is what cider can do. So, you know, cider, apples, but it's got a long way to go yet.
Awesome. This is a great show. I hate to cut it short, but we'll definitely be back. We'll have a lot more cider shows this fall. Special shout-out for special events, our good buddy Josh Bernstein, who is probably the most popular beer author right now in America. He's got an event, a new book launch on Tuesday, September 20th at Brooklyn Brewery. Tickets at Brown Paper Tickets. His new book's coming out about IPAs. We'll have him on the show September 27th. Justin and I are going on September 23rd and 24th up to Boston, the Copenhagen Beer Celebration, the Crazy McKellars and Shelton people. So thanks so much, everybody. And thanks to Tom Oliver, Ryan Burke, John Reynolds, and B.R. Royler for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. All right.
Thank you, Jimmy.
Thanks to our sponsor, Union Beer Distributors.
Thanks, Jimmy.
And we'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Thanks to everybody, Maggie and Justin, producers, and Pierre, engineer tonight. We'll catch you next time, Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.